Hi, this is Dr. Bill Meyer. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. You can hear the show live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., and there are many more podcasts for this and all our other faith radio shows available on our website. You can just go to myfaithradio.com. And thanks so much for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
He's a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer live.
Well, good morning and welcome. What are the issues that divide Christians? There are several, and they're biggies. And we're going to be diving into those issues that we may have very different perspectives on, depending on our denominational affiliation, maybe our political persuasion. And one of the best guys I know to help us out with that is my friend Alex McFarland, who is a nationally known apologist and author and speaker and guy with a very brilliant mind. And he is going to help us sort of separate the wheat from the chaff when it comes to the big issues that divide Christians. That's coming up here in just a few minutes on Faith Radio. And of course, we would love to hear your questions for Alex. So get set for a rip-roaring 45 minutes or so when he joins us here in just a bit. Hey, I found something interesting this week in the news that I thought I'd pass along to you because it's something that I think should concern all of us as Christians and also in families. And that is the issue of pornography and free Wi-Fi access in restaurants and retailers across the country. Here's what's going on. There is a group of Christian men that is asking McDonald's and Starbucks to block pornography in their stores. The group is called Join 1 Million Men. They're a Southern Baptist group. And they have requested that those two retailers, those two companies, install porn filters on their free in-store Wi-Fi. Jay Dennis is co-sponsor of this group, the Join 1 Million Men campaign, and he is encouraging all Christians to weigh in on this issue. They've actually set up a petition where you can ask McDonald's and Starbucks to do exactly that. Join 1 Million Men is seeking commitments from 1 million Christian guys to live pornography-free lives, which I think is just a wonderful goal. Particularly because, unfortunately, there are a lot of Christian men who are struggling with pornography. Barna Group did a big survey, and this is kind of stunning, but I want to pass it on to you because you need to know. They surveyed 400 Christian men, did a random sample of Christian men across the country. They found that more than three-quarters of Christian guys between the ages of 18 and 30 say they look at pornography at least once a month. They also found that 77% of men between the ages of 31 and 49 reported looking at porn at work during the past 3 months. That's just stunning to me. Now, I haven't closely looked at the Barna research to see how it was done, but I have a lot of faith in the group. They do their homework. They are good researchers. And if that is true, it is just a real sad statement about the Christian community right now. And so I think this particular campaign is a good one in that what they want to do, they launched this campaign along with a group called Enough is Enough, which is a nonprofit organization that's trying to make the Internet safer for children and families. And they say that these filters, these pornography filters in McDonald's and Starbucks, would also prevent teenagers from bypassing parental controls on their wireless devices so they can view pornography in public Wi-Fi hotspots. And by the way, there are some restaurants that are already doing this, Panera Bread and Chick-fil-A. Kudos to both of those restaurants. They already have pornography filters on their public Wi-Fi. But because McDonald's and Starbucks are so huge with so many locations, if they would agree to do this, it would mean 25,000 restaurants, 25,000 McDonald's and Starbucks across the country would have safer, free Wi-Fi access. They're already doing this in Great Britain, United Kingdom. In fact, McDonald's and Starbucks agreed to do this as part of a voluntary campaign led by British Prime Minister David Cameron, who, by the way, is very concerned about the impact of pornography on families and on society. So good for you, David. And if you want to learn more about this campaign, how you can get involved, let me give you the website, because you can sign up. You can be one of the guys that commit to living a pornography-free life, and you could be one of the people, men or women, who petition Starbucks and McDonald's to make this change. The website is join1millionmen.org. Use the numeral 1 in the web address, join1millionmen.org. Well, I do get emails here at Faith Radio, and I heard from Heather in Bloomington, and Bloomington, Minnesota. She writes this: Dear Dr. Bill, my boyfriend and I are both from broken homes, and we want to divorce-proof our future marriage. Is living together a good test of future compatibility? Wow, that's a great question, Heather, and actually that's a question a lot of young people are asking these days. The National Marriage Project did a survey. They found about 60% of young adults in America say they plan to live together before marriage. And many of these young people grew up in homes where divorce occurred, and they experienced a lot of pain and a lot of insecurity as a result of their parents' breakup. And because of that, they don't want to repeat their parents' mistakes. They are determined, more than anything, they want to find a soulmate that they can be married to for life. And Heather, you sound like that sort of person. And it sounds like you and your boyfriend may believe that living together is a good way to find out if you're compatible. It's kind of sort of like a test drive that will improve your chances for having a successful marriage. But let me tell you, Heather, this seems to make sense, but actually just the opposite is true. Because we have now dozens and dozens of research studies on cohabitation. And here's what they tell us. Couples who live together before marriage have a 50 to 60% higher divorce rate than those who don't. And not only that, they also have higher rates of domestic violence. And they're more likely to cheat on each other. And Heather, something else that a lot of women aren't aware of, if a cohabiting couple gets pregnant, there is a high probability that the man will leave the relationship within 2 years, resulting in a single mom raising a fatherless child. That's tragic. So, Heather, the best way to test your compatibility for marriage, let me just mention a couple of things. First of all, and this, for some young people, they may go, I can't believe you're suggesting this. Date for at least 1 year before getting engaged. 1 year? That's 52 whole weeks. You can do it. My wife and I did it. And we're thankful. Because you go through those four seasons of life with somebody, and you get to know their friends and family, and you go to church with them, and you really get to know who they are as a person. And you get past that initial infatuation stage, which, by the way, other research has shown in the first, probably 3 to 6 months of a relationship, your endorphins are just going haywire in your brain, and you're getting this lollipops and butterflies feeling from infatuation. Not that that's a bad thing. That's a great thing because it cements your relationships. It draws you closer together. But because of that, you're very unlikely to take a hard look at your relationship and potential pitfalls or obstacles that might cause marital problems down the line. So date for a year before getting engaged. Another thing you can do to assure marital success is wait until you're at least 23 to get married. Again, I know there are people listening, even parents who might have 18, 19-year-old kids. Well, Dr. Bill, that just seems, really old-fashioned. No, 23 years of age. Let me tell you why. All the research says that there's something that happens around the age of 23, and usually it's because a young person has, let's say they've graduated from high school, they've gone to college, now they're living outside the home, hopefully unless they're one of these boomerang kids that's, you know, back living in the garage apartment with mom and dad. If you have a chance to live out on your own and establish your own life for a bit and kind of get out from under mom and dad's wing, you're much more likely to have a successful relationship. And something about the adolescent brain. We seem to know that it doesn't really mature until the early to mid-20s. So wait till you're 23 to get married. And the final thing you can do is to get involved in a structured premarital counseling program that includes psychological testing. And one of the best ones out there is called Prepare and Enrich. Great organization. Dr. David Olson, University of Minnesota, did all the research on this, has a very high, what we call predictive validity, which will predict whether or not your marriage will succeed. And then if you have some problems that come up on this test, your therapist can go over them with you. So, and I said that was the final thing, but there's one more that I think is overarching of all of these things, and that is to have a close relationship with Jesus Christ, to be committed to Him, and to have a solid Christian worldview, and to be growing in the Lord, to be growing as a disciple. So I hope that's helpful to you, Heather. And if you want some more information on this, Focus on the Family has some great articles on this whole issue of living together before marriage. And so hopefully, Heather, and I'll be praying for you and your boyfriend, that you'll make the right choices moving forward. Well, it's 11:15. This is the Faith Radio Network. Thank you so much for joining us today. Coming up next, we'll be looking at the issues that divide Christians. And there are some whoppers. There are some big ones. We will get into that with my friend Alex McFarland, one of the top apologists in the country and a guy who knows Christian worldview and can really help us discern what's important and what's not. That's coming up next here on the Faith Radio Network.
It's Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
And welcome back. Our phone number, if you want to connect, 877-93-FAITH. Well, I'd love to hear from you today, especially if you have a question about some of the big issues that divide Christians, because that's what we're going to be talking about. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number. Our website, myfaithradio.com. My guest today, Alex McFarland. He's the Director for Christian Worldview and Apologetics at North Greenville University in Greenville, South Carolina. He's also the host of the Explore the World Word radio program. Alex has been a guest on Fox News' Spirited Debate with Lauren Green. He's been on Fox and Friends National Morning Show several times. He's the author of a whole bunch of books. This guy is a prolific author, including things like 10 Answers for Skeptics, Stand, Core Truths You Must Know for an Unshakable Faith, and the 10 Most Common Objections to Christianity. And today he is going to be talking about his new book, 10 Issues That Divide Christians. Alex, welcome to Faith Radio.
Well, good morning. It's great to be on, and I really appreciate you having me back.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Every time we have you on, Alex, we've got a lot of great listener response. And I know that last month you organized a major apologetics conference. This is an annual conference. It's called Truth for a New Generation, and it features some of the top apologists and Christian speakers in the country. Before we dive into your book, tell us a bit about some of the major highlights at the conference this year.
Well, thanks very much. And, hey, before I give you an update on the conference, let me say that your content just before the break about not cohabitating and not getting married too soon, you know, I wish every church in the nation would play that audio clip to their youth group. Brother, you hit it out of the park. You know, I was a youth pastor for 7 years before hitting the road as an apologist, and then you and I worked together at Focus on the Family, and I want to tell you, everything you said was absolutely right about not getting married too soon, not having sex before marriage. You know, one of the greatest predictors of breakup of a relationship is becoming physically intimate before marriage. And so I just want to give you big time kudos for what I was listening to while I was on hold.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And it's a major concern for me, and I know for you as well. We see so many young people making tragic mistakes and then just, you know, leading to more and more pain and divorce and breakup. And they don't know it. And, of course, the world is telling them just the opposite. The Planned Parenthoods of the world are saying, just go for it. Basically, you're just an animal. You're an animal. You're nothing more than an animal. And just, you know, please yourself. And I read some of the stuff. You know, Planned Parenthood has this website for teens, which I don't even want to mention some of the stuff on there because it's just, it's frankly disgusting. And that's what our kids are listening to.
Well, you know, I wrote a book called Stand Strong in College, which is really based on a seminar that I've done for 20 years called What You'll Hear Your Freshman Year, Preparing for the Ways That College Can Challenge Your Faith. So, you know, Tyndale and Focus on the Family wanted it to be a part of our Stand series, so they named it Stand Strong in College. But it's basically a book about how to help young people, you know, prepare and not lose their faith in college or lose their walk with the Lord. So I interviewed about 145 college students during the course of that book. And a lot of, you know, during the course of interviewing people for a book, somebody always says, hey, you need to talk to my friend. And I talked to so many young people that were in their mid to late 20s that had a bright, bright future ahead of them and made some decisions physically, spiritually, emotionally, financially, decisions that really derailed not only their college careers and a lot of opportunities, but oftentimes their walk with the Lord. And I remember one girl that I interviewed who had a full ride, an academic scholarship to a prestigious school. She had gotten pregnant while she was in her sophomore year, dropped out of school. And to her credit, I want to say she and the dad did get married, but she was working part-time like at a retail store. And the husband was struggling, and they were nearing 30, and neither one yet had a college degree. And they were, you know, trying to rebuild their lives and their walk with the Lord. But the point that I tell young people is, you know, decisions have repercussions. Mm. And God loves you, and even when we blow it, he can forgive us. And you know, Joel 2:25 says God can restore the years that the locust has eaten. But we need to remember that, you know, we're stewards of our life. We're not the owner. If we're a Christian, we've got to recognize that Jesus is the owner, and we're the steward, and we're to be good stewards of what he entrusts to us. And it just breaks my heart whenever I meet young people, and I have during the course of doing a lot of research, that really, you know, in their mid to late 20s, they're saying, man, if I could go back and undo some choices I made around 18, 19, 20, they wish they could. But what we can do as parents and leaders is help them preemptively make the decision to make the right choices.
Yeah, and you know, it really is a joint effort, isn't it, between mom and dad and the church. Unfortunately, a lot of parents kind of abdicate their responsibility, and they say, well, I'll just leave it to the youth pastor. You know, I'll leave it to the youth group to teach them right from wrong. And then you have so many youth leaders saying, oh man, I just wish this kid's parents would model for them what it means to be a Christian and to walk, you know, daily with Jesus Christ and to have an authentic faith. And they're coming to my youth group and they're just struggling. And oh man. So it does take that joint effort between mom and dad and the church. And I pray, and I know that's one thing you're passionate about. And I pray I'm starting to see some hopeful signs. As I look across the country in certain churches and Fuller with some of their sticky faith research, which I just love.
Right.
So I'm glad you're passionate about that as well, Alex, and maybe you know, you can continue to sound that clarion call as you go out and speak. So at this conference, I know I was looking at the list of some of the major speakers you had there, and man, it was just a cornucopia of brilliance.
I can't believe
I just said that.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, that's the first time today I've heard the word cornucopia.
Thanksgiving is just around the corner, so I could say it. So,
there you go.
So what were some of the highlights?
Well, you know, one of the highlights really was to meet, to hear and meet one of the great living heroes of the faith, and that's Johnny Erickson Tada. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had wanted for a number of years to get Johnny in one of our Truth for New Generation conferences. And, oh, my goodness, she and her husband, Ken Tada, are just amazing. And they're the most sunshiny people, just so much fun to be around. And, of course, she held a crowd of 2,500 people spellbound for about a 50-minute talk, got a standing ovation that would, just rival the Grammy Awards or something, So Johnny is amazing. Dr. Ben Carson. Bill, have you met Ben Carson?
You know, I haven't. And for our listeners that aren't familiar with Ben, of course, he's a noted neurosurgeon and has been suggested by some as a possible presidential candidate in 2016. What did Ben have to say?
Well, it was amazing. He got up and, he had a rousing standing ovation. And then, first of all, the very first things out of his mouth, he said, well, before I start my speech, I just want to thank the one that is the focal point of my life, the absolute center of my life, and everything I am is tied to my Lord and my Savior, Jesus Christ. Everything about me, you need to know, is related to the fact that Jesus is my Lord and my Savior. I mean, that was his first words.
Wow.
And and he talked about, he talked about Obamacare. And as 37 years on the staff of Johns Hopkins Medical Center, I didn't know he was that old, actually. But he was for 37 years on the faculty of Johns Hopkins, and Ben Carson performed the world's first successful separation of conjoined twins joined at the head. And so here's a guy that God has really used. But he gave us a speech about personhood and, the biblical view of personhood and why abortion is wrong. And why our medical care, just the whole the idea of giving care and benevolence to people, it's because people are made in the image of God. And so our theme at this year's Apologetics Conference was Life and Liberty, Gifts from God. So a lot of what Dr. Carson honed in on, and he touched on a number of things, but was really, biblical view of life and medicine. And it was quite inspiring.
We're going to take a break here in a bit, but Alex, just give us quickly the website for that particular conference, because I know you'll be having it again next year. I'm assuming you will.
Yes, sir.
Annual event. And go ahead.
Yeah, the website is truthforanewgeneration.com, which we haven't updated yet because the event was just a month ago, but the 2015 info will be up soon. And, of course, my own website is my name, alexmcfarland.com.
Yeah, and you can find some great resources on apologetics and Christian worldview and for youth at Alex's website, alexmcfarland.com. We're going to take a quick break here on the Faith Radio Network and be back as we dive into this book, 10 Issues That Divide Christians. And Alex will give us some insights on some of those issues and how maybe we can better get along in the church, in the body of Christ, even when we have very differing opinions on some biggies. That's coming up here on Faith Radio. Give us a call if you want. We'd love to hear from you. 877-93-FAITH. And you can visit our website, myfaithradio.com. Be right back.
It's Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
And welcome back. I want to say hi to our friends listening on Faith 1270 in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Maybe you've tuned in on Faith 1190 in Madison, Wisconsin. Thanks for taking us with you on this Saturday in the Upper Midwest. And our guest is author, speaker, apologist Alex McFarland. He has a brand new book out called 10 Issues That Divide Christians. First of all, Alex, what inspired you to dive into, because some of these are pretty hot button issues. Were you starting to see a lot of kind of infighting in the body of Christ that made you want to tackle this topic?
Well, That's a great question. You know, I have often read Ephesians where it talks about that the body of Christ would come into a unity under Jesus, that you know, we as the body of believers would be as one. And, you know, Jesus prayed that in John 17, verse 21. Christ is on his way to the cross, and he said, "Father, I pray that they all may be one, O-N-E, one, that the world may believe you have sent me." And, you know, Bill, I think about apologetics, which is, you know, I know you're quite an apologist yourself, you are, and that's been my ministry now for 23 years. And, you know, there's the existence of God and the trustworthiness of the Bible, and there's so many things we can talk about. But I think one of the greatest evidences for the truth of the Christian faith, one of the greatest evidences that we're missing out on, is unity within the body of Christ. And, you know, I'm on the road as an evangelist speaking like every weekend. I mean, almost every weekend. I'm, you know, 1,500 churches in 20 years. And I'm seeing so much division over issues that really should be a no-brainer. I mean, for instance, and let me just get the 800-pound gorilla in the room, you know, we'll bring this out first, homosexuality and gay marriage. There are churches that are dividing. There are pastors that are really feeling the pressure in order to keep their job or to placate the personnel committee. They don't really address abortion or homosexuality, or as you addressed so wonderfully at the beginning of the show, pornography. By the way, Bill, do you know in America, $3,000 a second is spent on pornography?
It's stunning. And, you know, you got these big porn kings that are trying to hook in young people at earlier and earlier ages, and, you know, by just enticing them with an image and then getting them to go deeper and deeper and steal mom and dad's credit card. And it's insidious.
By the way, I don't know if you saw in the news, and while I'm on hold, it came up that Larry Flint's daughter just died. She was 47. She was in a car wreck. She was drunk, did not have a driver's license, wrecked her car. She's died. And, you know, I think about the legacy of pornography. Many people that are of a certain age will remember Larry Flint because he was pretty famous in the news, I suppose, back in the 80s and 90s, but he's the publisher of a pornographic empire. And just the pornography in terms of relationships, marriages, and even lives, there's been a high body count, hasn't there?
There has been. And it's, again, it's something that just saddens me because I've seen it in the relationships of people I know personally.
Yeah.
I've seen it in the lives of pastors that have wrecked ministries.
Yeah, and so this book, 10 Issues That Divide Christians, you know, I'm traveling the country and I'm just, you know, meeting people, and I guess what really prompted me to go to my publisher with this idea, I do a fair amount of teaching in colleges and at churches on this question: what did America's founders intend the role of religion to be in American life? So I talk about, you know, really Christianity was a big part of the DNA of the founding of America. You know, if you look at a Judeo-Christian worldview and the moral backdrop that our founding fathers really stood before, it's clearly biblical. But I was teaching on this topic at a church, and a lady in the vestibule, you know, people were shaking my hand, and, you know, I wasn't really going off on any kind of a rant. I was, you know, merely sharing quotes from the founding fathers and really the record of history. And this lady came up and she said, "Well, I'll have you know, young man, that God is not a Republican." And Bill, have you ever heard that? Have you ever heard people say that?
Yeah, I have. And he's not a Democrat either, by the way, just to point that out. So.
That's true. So, you know, we started out talking about American exceptionalism and the role of government. You know, what is the relationship between religion and government? And, you know, I wrote a chapter on social justice and, you know, what is a biblically informed position on things like welfare or compassion? And it just grew, to be honest, into about 25 topics. But my publisher said, "Hey, you've had a really good run with books that have 10 in the title. So let's make this 10 issues. So we kind of counted the number of, responses people had given writing into us. And so at least at this juncture, it was the top 10 issues that seemed to divide Christians.
Now, I want to spend some time unpacking each of those issues, but before we do, just give us a broad overview of the 10. You mentioned homosexuality and abortion. I think social justice is one. What are the others?
Well, war. What is the Christian view on war and the military, the environment? What is the truly Christian position on the environment? Things like climate change and global warming, religious pluralism, and evil. Why does God allow evil? And what is the church's role in society? I mean, are we to be involved in political and cultural issues? I mean, does the church speak to culture, or does the church merely share the gospel and keep quiet about all these other things? These are among the topics we covered.
Okay, I want to bounce off that last one, because that is a big dividing line in many churches and actually between denominations, because we have those, and this, you know the history of it around the turn of the century when the fundamentalist movement really wanted to separate, and then we had the social gospel churches, and even today we have churches that say that the primary goal, in fact maybe the only goal, is to win people to the Lord and to assure their eternal salvation, while others say the primary goal is to reach out with the love of Jesus Christ in compassionate ways to serve the poor and fight injustice. And unfortunately, it seems like never the twain shall meet. There's not a lot of agreement, and yet I think you would probably say both are true.
Yeah, it's a false dichotomy. A false dichotomy is an unnecessary separation of two options. Either we cloister away and retreat from the culture, as you're correct, the fundamentalism of the early teens and 20s suggested, or we look to government as our savior. There have been a lot of people in recent years that made kind of a caricature of the religious right, that the religious right must have assumed that government, if we get the right people elected, we'll have the millennium and, heaven on earth will ensue. No, that wasn't really what they believe, certainly not what I believe. Bill, you and I both are the beneficiaries of a group that I think they were giants that kind of emerged in the 70s. There was D. James Kennedy, who was at Coral Ridge Press, and there was Chuck Colson, and there was Don Wildman, the founder of the American Family Association. And there was Jerry Falwell, who founded the Moral Majority and Liberty University, and also our brother, colleague, and friend, Dr. James Dobson. And they really, and Francis Schaeffer, am I leaving anybody out, Bill?
Those are some big names, and all of them have played such a key role. And you're right, there's been a real caricature. And the media is wonderful at that because, well, Americans, frankly, they like black and white. They don't like gray. They kind of like to see, cast somebody in one light. I know you speak about this in debates about how our media unfortunately mischaracterizes or just ignores sometimes the alternative viewpoint. When they don't want to report on it, they just leave those facts out or those arguments out of
sure.
the equation.
Sure. Well, you've got like a Bill Maher on Politically Incorrect, and he repeatedly, he would say things like this. He would say, Christians are people who think that they're going to go to heaven because they're better than everybody else. Mm. And of course, that's not what the gospel says. And, there's the caricature of, that Christians are people who want to, cram their beliefs down people's throats. And we know that that's impossible. Only God can change a heart. But, as far as culture, which does divide a lot of churches, I applaud the people like James Dobson and Francis Schaeffer that wanted to see the church speak to cultural issues as great leaders in times past have done, like William Wilberforce and Dietrich Bonhoeffer. But we've retreated from the culture, and I was on a phone call a couple of weeks ago, Bill, with one of the researchers from Barna. You mentioned Barna, and I agree they are, I think, very trustworthy. And, you know, there, in the last two presidential elections, there's just been this disproportionately high number of evangelicals that aren't even registered to vote.
Amazing. It stuns me every time I see those stats, Alex.
Exactly. And, you know, right now, there are something like 170 million Americans that claim to be Christian. But Barna says of the ones that really, truly are born again, I mean, that really probably do have a personal relationship with Jesus, you know, we're talking still about 68 million, 63 to 68 million. Now, obviously, only God knows somebody's heart. But, you know, with 68 million that really probably do know Jesus and have a biblically informed worldview, oh, my goodness, if we voted, I mean, those born-again Christians that have a biblically informed perspective, if they were registered to vote and would vote, we could have anything we wanted. I mean, from the Oval Office to the local dog catcher. I mean, really, if Christians would become politically engaged.
What do you think lies behind the apathy of so many Christians? Do you think it's, well, politics is a dirty business, and again, it's all about saving souls and the eternal perspective, and why would I even want to vote or get involved because it's all, you know, been predetermined anyway, you know, by the media? What's the reason that so many evangelicals are not going to the polls?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that there's probably a feeling of resignation, and maybe, you know, I'm only one person. What can I do? That my vote won't even matter, which, you know, is just a misnomer. You know, bricks make up a wall, and every single brick counts. And lo and behold, you know, if all the bricks are stacked the right way, you've got something substantive there. You know, folks, we have, and I guess it's timely that you and I are talking about this because we're only days away from another election. I mean, much of the world looks in awe at what you and I can freely do every 2 to 4 years, and that's freely cast a ballot that not bullets, but ballots can chart the trajectory of our future. I was speaking in Amsterdam, and I met a man from India, and he said, you know, you guys have an election, and in a few hours you can know who the winner is. He said, where I live in India, we know the winner of an election 6 months before the election happens. Also, I've got to say this. You know, we are stewards, and here in America, we have been bequeathed with a wonderful thing called liberty, freedom. And, you know, Benjamin Franklin said everybody loves the fruits of freedom, but few are willing to tend the tree that bears the fruits. We've got to understand that this wonderful thing called democracy requires maintenance, you know, and our investment in this, you know, we don't have to die at Valley Forge in the snow like our founders did. But we do have to, rain or shine, get out there on election day, and inconvenient as it may be. You know, Bill, I got to say this. I'm up on a soapbox here, but listen. It might be inconvenient to get out and vote, but to be the subject of a socialist regime, that's inconvenient too. To know that my tax dollars are funding the murder of unborn humans, that's not convenient. And look, in 40 states we had defense of marriage amendments, and now activist judges with a stroke of a pen, not because it's been proven scientifically that people are born gay, not because it's been proven that the Constitution gives a protected right to engage in crimes against nature. And by the way, Jefferson believed in natural law. That's why states had crimes against nature, because they believed in what Jefferson called the laws of nature and nature's God, which is a point, by the way, that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. reiterated in his 1963 Pulitzer Prize-winning treatise, Why We Can't Wait. Dr. King predicated the validity of the civil rights movement on natural law, which is what says marriage is between a male and a female. And here we've got judges with nothing other than their own opinion overturning the voice of the people in 40-some states. Friends, it's time to get out and vote, and again, for God's people to be involved in the electoral process.
A great challenge for all of us, Alex. Our guest is Alex McFarland. We're talking about his new book, 10 Issues That Divide Christians. We actually have three copies of the book to give away. If you would like one of those, if you call us right now at 877-93-FAITH, we'll put you into a drawing at the end of the hour. Perhaps you will have one of those to put on your bookshelf or share with your small group or in your church, maybe if you're in ministry. Again, give us a call, 877-93-FAITH, here in the next 10 minutes or so. Give us your contact info, and maybe you'll win a copy of 10 Issues That Divide Christians. It's 1147. We're going to take a quick break. This is the Faith Radio Network.
Faith Radio.
Welcome back. Our phone number, 877-93-FAITH, if you want to connect, and we always love it when you do connect. If you have a question for our guest, Alex McFarland, 877-93-FAITH. I want to say hi to our friends listening on Faith 1200 in Fargo-Moorhead today. Thanks for taking us along on your Saturday. And if you're listening on Faith 90.5 in beautiful Duluth, Minnesota, or Superior, Wisconsin, on the shores of Lake Superior, thanks for making Faith Radio part of your weekend. Alex McFarland is an apologist, an author, speaker. He has written a new book called 10 Issues That Divide Christians. Alex, one of those issues is social justice, and it's kind of become a buzzword. In recent years, when I hear the word social justice, I immediately have to ask, what exactly are you talking about? Many young evangelicals have jumped on the social justice bandwagon, not really understanding that some of the things that are advocated by the more, if I could use the more extreme social justice people, or maybe the more leftward leaning, are really antithetical to Christianity. So help us unpack that, if you would.
Well, thanks very much. It's right to have compassion. Obviously, we care about fellow human beings and the human condition. You know, Bill, I was interviewed last week by Al Jazeera. It was the first time I've ever been interviewed by Al Jazeera. And I said on that interview that, you know, anytime, you know, human beings are seeing, you know, their fellow humans beheaded and the videos posted on the Internet, I mean, we care about that regardless of somebody's beliefs. But social justice in many American circles has kind of really gone awry. The concept just means, you know, that it's the government's responsibility to throw money at people, and it's my responsibility to agree with that. And if you call for any controls or parameters or accountability, you're labeled as being, you know, not compassionate. But, you know, the whole social justice, the idea that people should be treated fairly and humanely presupposes belief in moral absolutes, really. And what's so ironic in our age is that we've got a culture and certainly many elected leaders that really don't believe in moral absolutes, and yet they want justice for people. But you can't really have a just society unless you've got moral absolutes, and you don't have moral absolutes unless you've got God.
You have to ask the question, why? If someone is arguing for social justice, well, the poor should be treated fairly. Why? And the only end to that argument that logically makes any sense is that we're made in God's image and that we have worth and value. Because if not, if you just have a worldview that's based on evolution, hey, it's dog eat dog. It's the strong survive. And why should the poor be helped? Because, hey, they're the poor for a reason. You do have to kind of, with some individuals, ask them, maybe through Socratic questioning, to help them realize that their worldview really doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. And you know, the welfare state, we know in the late 60s under LBJ there was the Great Society Program. And since the late 60s, we have spent tens of billions of dollars, just an almost incalculable amount of money on welfare. And you know, there's a quote in the book by Benjamin Franklin that it says this, Franklin believed that the welfare state was very counterproductive. And here's what Benjamin Franklin said. I think the best way of doing good to the poor is not by making them easy in poverty, but by leading them or driving them out of it. Now, speaking of Britain, Franklin talks about this. He says, there's no country in the world, Britain, where so many provisions are established for the poor, and there's heavy taxation on the rich to support the poor. Yet there is no country in the world in which the poor are more idle, dissolute, drunken, and insolent. And Franklin goes on, and he warned about a welfare state that, quote, offers a premium for the encouragement of idleness. Now, you know, I've interviewed lots and lots of people, and I was interviewing some college students that were, this was about 2 years ago, this would have been November of 2012, that were livid that their government-sponsored cell phones had not arrived yet.
and you should get two, because that's what the government wants you to have. You should have at least two, right?
Exactly, exactly. And I asked this one student, I said, is it the government's role to provide you a cell phone? And they looked at each other and thought for a minute, and the girl said, I guess so. And, you know, I just wanted to pull my hair out. Listen, I love young people, but friends, you know, the government's role, at least as the founders intended it, and this is part of what made us, my heart is with Jesus, and I'm a Christian first, but I'm a patriot second. I believe America at her best was second only to Israel under King Solomon as being the greatest nation that this planet has ever seen. But it was only when we recognized God and we recognized human responsibility, and the role of government was limited. The role of government was to, you know, protect the coasts and deliver the mail and pretty much otherwise stay out of our lives. And the government's posture toward religion was not one of hostility, but one of encouragement. That was what, as Tocqueville recognized and Reagan recognized, that was what made America great, and that was when America was great. And look, let me just say this. This welfare state that the Democrat Party wants to perpetuate, it's not about loving your neighbor and seeking the highest good of another. Much of what passes for compassion and social justice these days are simply liberals in power that want to perpetuate their voter bloc. And, you know, Jesus calls us to love our neighbor, and truly loving our neighbor is not allowing our neighbor to be embroiled in a worldview that contributes to their destruction. I believe the welfare state, as has been handled in America over the last four decades, has really squelched human potential. Mm-hmm. And there are millions of creative, gifted people made in the image of God that have never known what they were here to accomplish. They've never realized their potential because they were a part of a system that said you can't survive without Big Brother helping you.
You know, and Alex, I've seen that firsthand when I was working in Los Angeles County mental health system. Those people who expected the government to be their mom, their dad, that they expected that check once a month, and if it wasn't there, they got really angry. What's interesting is, though, when the church or an individual would reach out with compassion to those individuals, they were so thankful. They were, when there's a personal relationship involved, and my wife has done that. She's reached out to a young woman we know who had her children out of wedlock and who was struggling, and this young woman, when we help her in some way financially, she is just so grateful. But if that check comes one day late from the government, oh boy, there's an explosion. You know, we're just about out of time, and I know we've barely just scratched the surface of this wonderful book, Alex. I want to commend people to your website, which is alexmcfarland.com, alexmcfarland.com. The new book is called 10 Issues That Divide Christians. Alex, I appreciate you so much. You just are making such a difference in this world today. You're helping to educate Christians. You're helping to challenge young people to really dive into the Bible and take seriously their Christian faith. And I want to just tell you, we're going to be praying for you as you head out on the road. I know it's a grueling travel schedule, and I just pray that God will continue to use you in a mighty way and open new doors for you to share his truth with an unbelieving generation.
Well, God bless you. That is so kind. I value your prayers. I love you. I appreciate you, my dear brother. And it's such an honor to be on with you today. Thank you.
Alex McFarland, our guest here on the Faith Radio Network. That wraps up our program for today. My friend Neil Statham is up next with his weekend edition of Connecting Faith. You have a great weekend. We'll see you next Saturday at 11. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. If you'd like more information about this show, just go to myfaithradio.com and click on the program page for Dr. Bill Meyer Live.